recording the Fat Camp Show number 26 for sometime around September 2017. FatBlake.com presents Fat Camp, a more or less monthly podcast covering different technical aspects of fat and plus bikes. Until this week, we don't really get that technical. Look for all our shows at fat-bike.com/radio or subscribe to our feed on iTunes.
Ken, how you doing?
I'm doing very well. How about yourself, Andy?
I'm doing okay. So it's number 26, and this show is going to be sponsored by reality. Yeah, because that is where we have not been for 2-3 weeks.
Well, no practical reality.
Right.
A whole different kind of reality.
Right. Yeah. It's okay. It's brought to you by Practical Reality, which most of the time sucks.
Has crashed back into our lives.
Yeah, exactly. This show is going to be about a brief, important news item that just came out. And then it's going to be a slideshow. And you can follow along right with us.
There you go. Yep, exactly.
If you'll notice in the show notes, there is a slideshow that you can click on. And we're gonna talk about that slideshow.
Yeah. So what Andy's talking about is I ended up riding the Colorado Trail and then doing Leadville shortly thereafter.
Oh, I thought it was about my professional development I did over Reading Apprenticeship.
Everybody wants to, yeah.
Right.
Reading Apprenticeship, man. That is like it's totally what I want to like bone up on right now.
Yeah,
especially
Colorado
when I
Trail.
Listen to the Fat Camp.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right.
No, but so I ended up doing the Colorado Trail, did Leadville. What Andy's referencing is after the fact I tried to put together some information so I could remember the Colorado Trail, but also some stuff that I thought might be helpful to other people if they wanted to attempt it or check out what I did. Or
I wonder if that's common that a lot of people who do the Colorado Trail don't remember it.
No, but I mean, it blurs.
Right.
It blurs in a big way.
Oh, I'm sure it does.
Yeah,
in many ways.
Yeah. It's one of those things between the fatigue and then it's just like, I mean, there's so many just like gorgeous high alpine meadows or just like you downhill for like, I think there's one downhill is like 18 miles long.
Oh my gosh.
A good chunk of it was just amazing single track. And then also a good chunk of it was just these incredible views where you'd end up having alpine and then you drop into, you know, like sort of the pine zone.
Yeah.
And that's got its own like kind of character to it and like really good smells and stuff. And then you drop into the poplars and then you kind of come out of that and you go into the sagebrush.
Mm-hmm.
And so you go all through these zones on top of it being just an amazing ride.
Several different levels of enjoyment.
Yeah, and so you do that a couple hundred times or
right.
whatever it is.
Right.
And it tends to end up
you tend to forget
together. That. Yeah, it's like, was that day three or was that day five?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I knew that that's what you were talking about, so. But thanks for clearing that up rather than not clearing it up. So, I've had a brief conversation with him, but I really haven't gotten into the nitty-gritty of the trip, and so I suggested, hey, why don't we do a podcast that's not technical, except maybe the PowerPoint that you that you follow along with. You'd be
Strava
like,
stats,
oh my gosh,
yeah.
Right, exactly.
If you want to know my heart rate minute by minute, check out, yeah.
But an interview rather than a technical podcast, but we'll try to, you know, we'll throw in as much stuff that I don't know and have you explain as possible.
Okay.
Yeah. But you brought something up the other day that just came out this week.
Yeah, there was you talking about the Velocity stands?
Yeah.
Yeah. This is something I'm really stoked about.
What's the background on this?
I mean it sounds like there was some sort of
why did they need to play well together?
Okay. So Velocity rims.
Right.
Let me kind of sing the praises of Velocity rims.
Okay.
Being a Michigander, it's a Michigander company.
Right.
That makes me happy.
Yeah.
It's based out of Grand Rapids. All their rims, if I remember correctly, are manufactured in the United States.
Okay.
They're someplace down in Florida.
All right.
So, you know, U.S. made company. They make very good designs. They tend to be good weights. They tend to have like really good durability, and they end up, you know, having a fairly wide rim. You know, there's some options. And it's like for fat bike type stuff, they don't get into fat bike world. But I mean, as far as plus and stuff, you know, or mountain bikes or whatever, they have some really good options, and they tend to end up being very sort of up on, you know, as rims have progressively gotten wider, they're like, you know, standing kind of ahead of the wave, or however you want to put it, okay, and making sure their rims are, you know, a pretty decent width for whatever era you're in.
And the price point's pretty
Price point's cool. Okay. Yeah, good. And then on top of it, they kind of come in some cool colors.
Okay, well.
So, hey, you know, don't disparage that either.
I argue, and always will, that what it looks like is technical.
Yep.
So, okay.
So Velocity is a cool company.
Right.
So that's the cut and dry. The thing is, I've had some really bad experiences with their tubeless performance.
How so?
I got a pair of dualies. And what happens is like the inner part of the rim, the inner wall,
yeah,
there's like no bead shelf. Like when you're looking at it, it's like kind of totally flat, and then it drops down into the well in the middle of the rim.
Okay.
So your tires have to fit very, very well. Like the bead of the tire, the diameter of that,
yeah,
that has to, you have to end up making sure that fits that rim very well, because if it's a loose fit, there's gonna be very little friction there. And if you really side load your tire, it'll burp.
Okay.
So there's nothing like to hold the bead in.
Okay.
So you get, then you end up being like, oh, okay, as my tire like ages and gets looser, you got to put more wraps of like rim tape on there or something like that, or what have you. So it's been a big negative is the tubeless performance, in my opinion.
Okay.
I haven't owned any Blunts Tutu recently. Seemed like when they first came out, they were a pretty good tubeless rim. But I've heard some more reports about them being a little bit more of an issue. The dualies definitely have been an issue with wider tires.
Okay.
So the plus world. So what? The reason why we're bringing up all this stuff.
Right.
They ended up having a settlement with Stans.
Okay.
And they're going to end up licensing the Stans bead socket technology, which is basically that whole inner rim profile from Stans for their Blunt rims. And they haven't explicitly stated it. There was nothing in the press release about the dually. I'm really hoping, because the dually is a very similar design to the Blunt, I'm hoping that they apply it to the dually also. So it basically means that the one negative to the Velocity, right, or at least as far as their Blunt line, is now going to end up being addressed by the Stans stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, so it just, I've had very good success with Stans and tubeless reliability.
So, I wonder why this happened.
It sounds like there was, I didn't read the article that carefully. I only like got out what I was like, sweet, this is going to be a really, like, you know, this is going to be a great rim option that's going to be coming out. But it sounds like there was some sort of dispute. And between Stans, like Stans was saying, they were Velocity was infringing on some patent of theirs.
Okay.
So, you know, there was lawsuits going back and forth, and I don't know exactly the specifics. And this was the settlement that came out of that.
Okay.
And they specifically were like, okay, all our kind of road and gravel rims do not apply in this situation. So it sounds like those are, you know, those are not like in this licensing deal, but we're specifically going to license the Stans, you know, bead lock technology for, I know they said the Blunt SS.
Okay.
You know, I think they talked about the Blunt line as a whole.
All right.
So I'm hoping it also pours into the dually.
Cool.
Yeah. We'll see.
And that is our podcast.
That's our technical.
That's
like,
the
stuff.
Done. We're done with the outline. So moving on. Jeez, oh Pete. Cool. So let's you know what? Let's out of nowhere. Let's how quickly.
I got to pour a beer, so I'm going to be
for
a minute.
But we just within the last 5-10 minutes got done listening to the sweet intro music. We're going to let you sample that again. And we'll be right back with the Colorado Trail Stats, the 2017 ride. to number 26. And if you are a laptop or a desktop, I invite you to go to the show notes and open up the slideshow and hit the slideshow with us. If you're in your car, you're mowing the lawn, you're doing something that you shouldn't be doing, then when you get a chance, check it out because it'll all make sense to you. But what was the reason that you were doing this Colorado Trail? What bug crawled in your ass and said, let's go suffer really bad for a long time?
So we got to start a long ways back.
Oh,
and
jeez, oh, Pete.
So we've got, you know, this friend, James and Lori Gomez.
Right.
And they did, the Leadville 100 a couple years ago.
Heard of it.
And it kind of kicked their butt. So
I think
it was in the process of them getting ready for that race. They had done one of the qualifier races, and they raced tandem. They did one of the qualifier races, and they ended up like winning the tandem division, or I think they had to. Yeah, they must have won it. And they got like another entry to Leadville. So after a little while, after sort of the pain of doing it and having to kick their ass kind of left, James ended up having this free entry or whatever, you know, sort of dangling out there. And he's like, man, I'd really like to go back and try it single speed.
Right.
So then he's like, oh, you know, okay, what's Lori going to do?
Mm-hmm.
So they asked me and they were like, hey, would you want to do Leadville? Would you want to race with Lori? So I'm like, yeah, what the heck? You know, it's like I've raced with Lori a few times. She's a real fun person to ride with.
Yeah.
Strong rider. Yeah. You know, it's always a good time. Yeah. What the heck? I'll try for the lottery to get into Leadville.
Sure.
You know, I hear all these stories about people not being able to get in. So I'm like, I probably won't get in, you know, but what the heck? I'll try.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm not going to win the Powerball.
Yeah. And, you know, yeah, I'll sign up for it. You know, I've always wanted to do it. This is kind of the kick in the butt to actually do it. So we do the lottery. Bunch of people around here do the lottery.
Yeah.
Scott and Christine acquiring. Another friend of ours, Ryan.
Yeah.
Another friend tried, Brian.
Yeah,
Montan. He didn't make it in, but everybody else did.
Right.
It was just kind of a trip. We all made it in. So that's pretty cool. So then I've got the reality of doing Leadville.
Ooh, I gotta go do. I gotta do this for sure now on a tandem.
Yeah. So okay, I need to go out there and I need to get acclimated. So how much time can I get off of work realistically?
Right.
So I look at it, I'm like, dang, I think I can work 2.5 weeks. What do I want to do for, you know, 2 weeks before Leadville?
In Colorado.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I'm like, I got to get acclimated, you know? Oh, well, that's just about the length of time to do the Colorado Trail.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
And those of you that might not be familiar with the Colorado Trail, it's, I don't know, there's a lot of different published lengths for it, but it's around 550 miles between Denver and Durango.
Okay.
It's technically a hiking trail. There's a lot of sections that are just amazingly made mountain bike trail also, mm-hmm. but there's some wilderness areas. So you can't ride your mountain bike through the wilderness areas. So there's some reroutes. So I don't remember what the percentages work out. Consult the presentation.
Oh, I know. I'm looking right at him.
but it's a mixture of like a whole bunch of single track, you know, like,
yeah.
I don't know, 400-ish miles, 350 miles of it. And then 150, 200 miles of like gravel road primarily, and then a little bit of road.
And the reason that am I correct in saying that one of the reasons that you did this is because that trail pretty much stays at the Leadville start elevation?
It rarely drops below 10,000 feet.
Okay.
It averages above that.
Okay.
It gets up to 13 something.
Okay.
You know, it basically, it does emulate sort of Leadville elevation very, very, very well.
And it's 70,000
feet of climbing.
Light years of climbing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of climbing.
Okay.
So, So I started looking at this. I'm like, what the heck? You know, I think I can end up doing that and, you know, like, you know, 12 days. That's kind of what I was starting to estimate.
Sure. I think people do that.
Yeah. Plotted out. It's, I don't know. It ends up being around 45 miles a day. I'm like, how bad can 45 miles a day be?
Ooh. Ooh. Wow.
And then I started reading about it, and I realized how bad it might end up being. At the same time, it sounded like it still could be doable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
It, you know, it seemed like something that could end up being in my wheelhouse. So I gave it a try.
Did you think about, okay, then I got to do this race.
Oh, yeah. Totally. So what...
You were going to do parts of it? Are you going to do like as far as you wanted to go and then say, screw it, I'm going
to
the back?
Well, that's kind of the beauty of it. Okay. You know, starting in Denver, Leadville is 4 days away by trail-ish.
Okay.
And by car, it's like 2 hours.
Okay.
So it would be very easy to kind of get to the Leadville area, maybe go a little bit further out, come back, and then, you know, time it. So I would do that for a while, and then I have friends in the area, or I could ride back to Denver or whatever. You know, I had mm-hmm. a ton of options to just basically go screw around on the Colorado Trail if I didn't want to do the whole thing.
Right.
So it was kind of a low consequence type of thing. I went into it being like, I don't want to kill myself. You know, I don't want to be totally blown out.
I don't want to get in. I guess I don't want to wait to try to get into this because I'll forget that I wanted to get into it. But was there a point when you were like, I'm going all the way through this time. I'm not screwing around on the Colorado Trail. I'm going to finish this trail.
Oh, yeah, totally. Okay. Well, because, I mean, I'll start off and just say it was really hard. So it ended up raining a fair amount while I was out there. I think I got rained on every day or pretty darn close to that.
Okay.
And about half the days I ended up getting hailed or snowed on.
Okay.
So, I mean, it was challenging conditions
just
based on the weather. But I think it was like about 5 days in, it was when I was going from Breckenridge to Copper Harbor not Copper Harbor, Carver Mountain.
that was somewhere in Minnesota.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's a place in Northern Michigan, Copper Harbor is, no, but that was the worst hike a bike. It's just this phenomenally hard, steep. It was earlier in the trip, so I'm coming from Michigan.
Right.
So my blood is not used to dealing with altitude.
Right.
And that was the first time I ended up going above 12,000 on this trip.
Did you get headaches or feel sick or nauseous or not be able to shit your pants?
No, I had pretty much no negative consequences whatsoever at all. The big reason for why that was the case is 3-4 weeks prior, I was out in the Wind River Range for 10 days trying to hike the high route out there.
Okay.
So that actually was a perfect lead up because it... You know, over like each day, my elevation profile was pretty similar hiking out there for that as it was for riding the Colorado Trail. Okay. So the first day I started out at like 6,000-7,000 feet. I ended up going up to 8,000-9,000 feet. And then the second day I went from that sort of 9,000. And there was a bunch of little hills and big, you know, stuff. Couple little mountain ranges or whatever right. in between. So it'd go up and down and up and down. But then the next day I'd get to like 10, 11. And then like the third, fourth day, that was when I finally ended up going above 12. So at that point I had the headaches, you know, I had the lack of appetite, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
You know, a lot of the negative feelings. But this time when I went out there, I didn't have any of that, but you know, I totally had like the blackout thing where like you can go so hard that you can basically black yourself out. You can ride or hike or whatever yourself stupid.
I'm not going to say sure to that one because I have no fucking idea. Yeah, I don't ever want to work that hard, but it's just, little Caesar's like chasing you or something.
Yeah. You're referencing a ride from my childhood there. No, it's one of those things where, you're so oxygen starved that it's like, you can totally like go hard enough. Cause I mean, your muscular system, your whole body is used to having oxygen. So you've got the ability to way overtask your aerobic system.
Okay.
So, you know, I mean, your brain needs oxygen too. So when you start to end up like completely starving your body of oxygen, you know, your brain just basically starts to shut down. And it's like, you can get that in a lot of different places riding really, really, really hard. But it's like, it's, you know, the pain cave or whatever, where everything kind of blacks out and you get the one little spot.
Right. I understand. And then you're
like gasping on your handlebars afterwards.
Yeah. I now that you say that, I do remember when I was climbing Mount Everest, I had those feelings as well.
No, but I mean,
I catch myself saying sure during this discussion. And sure is like, I have no idea what he's, you know, I'm totally clueless. What am I saying sure for? Jeez. So, oh, I know what I want to ask. So the Wind River experience in early July.
Yeah.
It carried over long enough to lead you into Denver.
Yeah, I didn't have any, I mean, I wasn't hurt in the hurt locker altitude wise. My blood is really, you know, right, thin. It was not used to dealing with that. So,
okay.
You know, I basically had to feather my efforts.
You're going to have to watch this slideshow by yourself, folks, because we're not going to stick to it. This is an organic conversation. No. So, oh, damn it. Gosh, I forgot what I was going to say.
Oh, you are a bad interviewer.
I know. So, I guess we'll just, so day one.
Yeah.
You get to the trail, basically.
Yeah.
It takes you a long time, though.
The first half of the day was basically getting to the trail.
Okay.
Because I had a friend out there, and I could park my car in his, like, place of business parking lot, which had like security and stuff, so I knew everything was gonna be safe, but I was kind of paranoid about leaving the tandem in the car. So
was it inside the car?
I dropped it off at his house, which is like in downtown Denver, and I drove out into, I think, what is the Lakewood or whatever, it's on the western side of Denver. That's where his place of business was, ditched the car, and then I had to ride my bike basically back to central Denver, and then I took the bike path, you know, pretty much south until I got to Waterton Canyon.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, which was a great experience. I was super stoked about that.
What was great about the bicycle path, the Waterton?
Denver's
Park?
Got this incredible, you know, bike infrastructure. It's like you go right along this cool river.
Oh,
and it's a great bike path.
Wow.
You know, it's like you can rap with people on the way and stuff. There was a point where
Hey, Barb, look at this nut job. He's going to do the Colorado Trail.
No, but I mean, it's like, you know, there's like a standing wave at one spot where there's like all these guys on, you know, little
plastic things on the side. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, and you're like going out there ripping around on that. So you stop and you check them out for a while. Yeah. There's like, you know, this gigantic dog trophy that's like, it's just, there's all sorts of interesting crap to end up checking out as you go along. You know, so you're riding through this, like, this major, you know, waterway, this artery through Denver. Until you get out to Waterton Canyon, you ride past a couple of reservoirs and you start to kind of climb up, and then you get to the actual trailhead. So that was a cool experience. Hats off to Denver.
I got a question, because as I'm looking at this thing, the suffer score thing. I don't use the thing. So I don't, can I get a frame of reference as I go through these slideshows of like, okay, so what if you're like, what if you, I need some frame of reference. From not only for me, but for everybody else. Like, so don't use something like from Big M. I won't know.
Okay, so what Andy's referencing is that I put a bunch of stats together, and there's the normal stuff like, you know, how many miles I rode, how many hours,
the cliff bars you ate,
blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. How much, you know, how many feet of climbing. So one of the things I included in here is off of Strava, which is the suffer score.
Right.
Okay, and what the suffer score is, it's basically like this graded calculation based upon your heart rate of how hard you ended up going.
Okay.
So if you spend more time at a high heart rate where you're kind of like, you know, anaerobic or what have you, it's weighted more than if you're at like a super easy pace.
Okay.
And it pops out a score. So, you know, typically your races, you know, that's where you're going to see your hardest efforts, and you'll end up seeing some stuff like this. So I included on that because they kind of grade it, and you'll end up having, you know, hard, tough. I think then it goes to
extreme,
and then it goes epic.
Oh
yeah. And, it's a pretty good grade. I mean, like, you know, their epic is pretty damn epic as far as like the calculations for me go.
Like pros.
I mean, not necessarily. It's just, it's one of those days that you really are in the hurt locker. Like, you're doing a 100-mile race.
Yeah.
And you're racing it hard.
Right. Okay.
You know, you'll get an epic score then.
Gotcha.
But, you know, you only do a 70-mile race or whatever, you'd have to go really, really, really hard for it to be an epic score. Most time it's going to end up falling in the extreme category, you know? So, I mean, it's actually graded pretty well.
So why was day one epic?
Because it was a really long day and I was working really hard. I was fresh.
Yeah.
I could go really hard up on the uphills. So, if you want to look at these scores, what happens is, every day it drops initially because I just get more and more and more and more and more tired.
Yeah.
The elevation just completely and totally throttles
that,
me.
Yeah. But then towards the end of the trip,
yeah,
you start to get back and you're extreme again.
Right. Exactly. Because all of a sudden I start getting acclimated so I can go hard enough to get my heart rate up. What happens, my maximum heart rate is, I don't know, something like 170, 160, high 160s, whatever it is. So for me, like around here, when I was doing my long endurance rides, I mean, I would spend a lot of time on climbs, these sustained climbs where you're going for, 15, 20 minutes or whatever. I would end up spending time like 150, 160 easily.
Okay.
I'd kind of be feathering that whole kind of range. Whereas, in the middle of this trip, there was times where I was like, I was just completely in the hurt locker, but my heart rate was like 120.
Oh.
Yeah. So it was like dramatically less.
And you're just blown at 120.
Oh, you're going as hard as you can.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's just because, you don't have a lot of energy, you're kind of low on fuel, you're hurting because of the altitude, stuff like that. But
right.
But as I got more and more used to the altitude, I ended up going better and better and better.
I noticed there's this is going to be a podcast for September and October. I'm just going to say it right now because I can't get off the first day without asking you some technical aspects of your slideshow.
Yeah,
So I noticed that you rode for 7 hours, but you were out there for 10.
See, I don't know how accurate the Garmin is because
the first few days. Is that accurate? And I think it
probably underestimates my moving time a little bit.
Okay.
My moving time was so damn slow.
right.
No, because, the first couple of days I was kind of trying to find that level because
is this Garmin information or Strava phone app?
Garmin.
Okay.
So a lot of times on the uphills, you're looking at a section and you can be like, I could ride that. The problem is by the time I get to the top, because I'm not used to altitude, I'm going to be gasping for air and I'm just going to be like draped over my handlebars. We're kind of talking about blacking out or whatever.
Yeah.
And you're just gonna be like, you're going to be sitting there for a while just trying to get coherent.
Right.
And then you can start walking.
Sure. Okay.
So the first couple days were really kind of this, I was kind of figuring out this limit of, okay, which is more efficient? I can look up there and it's like, if I just walk it fast and I don't redline it.
Right.
I can sometimes clear it quicker than if I like ride 2/3 of it, but then I'm just like blown out and
right.
like stumbling through the other third. So, it was kind of working this level and there was a lot of times I got to admit, I was just like, I didn't get it right. I was just gasping on my, draped over my handlebars or whatever. So, there's some times I was moving really slow because I couldn't go faster. So I think earlier on, the moving time is probably a little on the low side, but whatever.
Okay. Go ahead.
It was slow going sometimes.
All right. I don't know how to, this is going to be a weird question or it's going to take me a long time to phrase it or to ask it. It's going to take me a long time to preface what I'm going to say. Jeez, oh Pete, what the heck? So you go from 600 feet
it was 5,000 something, it's 5.5 or whatever. Okay.
So over the next couple of days, you are getting acclimatized to your body working at a higher elevation.
Yep.
With less oxygen.
Yep. Took about a week.
Okay. Did you notice that within six, seven, 8 days that it got easier, but at the same time, you've also been out there for longer, so you're losing pounds off your body and, using fat as fuel and, you can't eat enough to resupply what you've used up.
Yep.
So even though here's the question. Even though you've got used to working with less oxygen at a high elevation, did being more tired make that neutral?
Eventually. I mean, both of those factors were kicking my ass to the same degree at basically 3, 4, 5 days in.
Yeah.
I mean, both of those things were killing me. I mean, you know what I mean? It was like, my diet drastically shifted over the course of that.
We will get into that sometime, though. Yeah. But you were getting used to functioning at a higher elevation, though.
Yeah.
So isn't your body like, okay, it's really hard, it's really hard, it's getting easier, it's getting easier, it's getting easier. Oh, now I can really function. Well, but I'm tired, man.
Well, it was more like about 7 days in, it was like all of a sudden I started getting these glimpses of like, man, I feel really good.
Oh.
You know, it's like, and you're riding along and stuff, and it's just like, you know, you all of a sudden you get 5, 6 hours into the day, and you're like, man, this is just kicked ass the whole time. You know, it's like, you know, you just had a 6-hour ride, and the whole thing was just amazing, and you're like, wow, I still haven't gotten tired. You know, so eventually it starts to kind of creep in, you know, and it's like the mornings were, you know, typically very good, and then it was like the afternoons would end up being pretty tough. But I mean, a lot of times it's just trying to figure out like what kind of food you want to eat, because a lot of, at elevation, I didn't feel like eating quite as much, or you know, like Cliff Bars normally they're fine. Yeah, you know,
so many different flavors.
I brought a ton of them, and the amount I brought for the first 4 days lasted me the full 12 days.
Got sick of Cliff Bars.
Yeah, no, well, I got sick of them quick.
Then let's get into it. Because my question was going to be, was there ever an easy day? But I'll ask you that later.
There were. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So the arc of my sort of mentality or whatever over the course of the ride was, you know, I started off and I was, you know, I ended up doing 60 some miles the first day, 60 some miles the second day.
Yep.
And,
let's,
you know,
fire through these slides.
Yeah. The first day was like, I think it was 31 miles or so. On the bike path. And, you know, just easy stuff.
Right.
And then, then I hit Waterton Canyon, and then the trail actually started. So I did about 30 miles and 30 miles of each.
Okay.
And, you know, so I had a pretty solid start there. And then the second day, I don't remember how many miles of single track, but I did a fair amount of single track. And then I got onto, there's a big detour. It's the biggest detour of the entire Colorado trail. Yeah. It's like 70 miles.
And is that a bike path?
Fuck no.
Okay.
it's this gravel road initially that goes up and down and up and down and up and down.
Oh,
and up and down.
Okay.
There's a lot of elevation gain in it. And,
you know, you climbed 6,000 feet that day.
Yeah. Pretty solid climbs. Near the end of it, you get onto the road. You know, you do an extended section on the road, which is pretty easy. And then you start to get onto gravel roads and you climb back up to the trail.
Okay. So how much do you add? If you went through the wilderness, how many miles would it be? Do you know that offhand?
I don't remember what it is, but that first detour is considerably longer. I want to say it's like 70-mile detour, and then you've got like a 20, 25 miles worth of trail.
Okay.
Because you go way out of your way. There's a more direct way, but it's a really, really, really busy highway that you just don't want to ride.
So,
whereas these gravel roads are still pretty kick-ass.
Right. So the next day, this is funny. So day one and day two, you're like, sweet.
Yeah, yeah.
You get to day three, and you ride about the same amount of time.
Yeah.
Give or take an hour.
Well, in the first part of the day, I mean, I was on the road. It was flying.
And you only cover two-thirds of the distance that you had the couple days before.
Yeah, but I basically climbed all day.
Yeah. You climbed the same amount that you did on the other day, but there was no downhills.
No, not until the end, thank goodness.
Right.
No, and there was a lot of really, really good trail during that day.
Uh-huh.
So it was a fun day to ride. That was a really good section of trail. I would highly recommend people ride.
Is that the day you went into Breckenridge?
No, I didn't quite make it to Breckenridge. I don't remember how many miles, but I was like, you know, 5 to 10 miles out of Breckenridge.
So then you get into Breckenridge.
Yeah. So then I started the next day, and that was pretty awesome, because I was like, okay, I've got, I don't remember what it was. It was like 10-ish miles to get down to Breckenridge.
Sure.
And most of that was downhill. So that was just a super, super, super fun section. I get down, it's 10:50. And
at
there's
night?
No, in the morning.
Oh, okay.
And I get onto the bike path, and the bike path would lead you back to, like, if you go, you know, left, mm-hmm. it leads you back into town, 4 miles. If you go the other way, it's like, I don't remember, like a mile or so to get to the trailhead, which would then end up taking you up. And I'm like, okay, what kind of amenities are in town?
Yes.
Is there a brewery? Google Map. I look at my, like, transit time. Like, it was like 10, 11 minutes, and it's 10:50.
By bike, yes,
and,
of course.
Okay, when does it open? 11 o'clock.
Wow.
Oh, the gods are telling me I should go get beer.
Yes.
So I go in. I stop at the brewery. I have a couple beers. They were awesome.
Okay.
First beer was on them. They gave me a bunch of chips. Yeah.
Chips.
Yeah. So he was like, this is the first injection of potato chips on the trip. And I was like, oh my God, these are the greatest things in the entire world. they're salt and awe. They're just amazing. So, I think I ended up having 3 bags of chips and I took some with me.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. 3 beers, 3 bags of chips. And I'm like ready to rock and roll. And I head out to the trail, you know, and it's the first part's gradual. It's good. You know, it's, you know, I heard there's going to be some burn zone I ended up going through. And about the time I got to the burn zone, it was getting so steep that I couldn't ride it. I think okay. if I was acclimated, I'd be able to ride it, but I couldn't ride it in my unacclimated state. So that's when the, you know, like the hiking started, and it went for a good 5-6 miles more. And Ooh. It just got steeper and steeper.
How long did it take you to clear it? 2-3 hours?
Yeah,
you pushed. So I think the text that I got from you was worst hike a bike ever. Push your bike, pull the brakes, walk a foot.
Yeah.
Push your bike.
Yeah.
Pull the brakes, walk a foot.
There was an extended section where it was super rocky and really, 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 really steep. And it was the worst hike a bike I've ever done.
Were you impressed with your shoes? With all the hiking you were doing?
They almost died.
Yeah.
They worked fine for me. Okay. I mean, I wouldn't do them again. Let me put it that way, okay. because I don't think they would hold up. I'm riding a pair of like Giro Empire VR90s or something like that. It's the lace up Giro shoes.
Right.
You know, it's a really stiff carbon soled shoe. But they're really comfortable. I really enjoyed wearing them on long rides. So I was like, what the hell? I know they work. I'll just run with it.
Sure.
And they were totally fine until they started to separate. The upper on the heel cup started to separate
okay.
out. And they were totally fine until the end when there was a ton of mud and it was like dripping in my shoes. And then I started to get some blisters. Oh. But we'll get to that.
That's a couple slides down.
Yeah, it's a whole different mentality
right,
out there.
Right. It might be the next podcast.
Yeah. But so okay. This climb is gold something or other. I don't remember. It was just an incredibly hard, you know, it was 2,500 or 3,000 feet of climbing. And I mean, the good part about the Colorado Trail, and I gotta say this, is like even when I was in my deepest, darkest moments, there was something that was either I was going through some place that was incredibly pretty or wildlife.
Something said hi to you.
Yeah, wildlife would inject and like make me smile or whatever. So it was like the worst possible section. You know, it's like I kind of clear this whole thing. It's like I go through this rocky ledge where it's like I'm like pretty much like totally lifting my bike above my head.
And your bike is 45 pounds.
Yeah, yeah. And then okay. I'm like kind of climbing up this whole thing. And this pika like pops out like 2 feet from my face and just like stares at me. And if people aren't familiar with pikas, they're the cutest little rodents. It's this little mouse thing with these like rounded ears. It looks like this little mini bear, these humongous eyes. It's like, it looks like this little cartoon animal.
And it said, hi, welcome.
Yeah. And it's just like, it stares me down. Like, I mean, it must've thought I was like super weak or something like that. Cause normally they're like scared of you and they run away.
Gotcha.
This was like the boldest pike in the entire world. And he's just like staring me down. And it was like, I couldn't help but just laugh my ass off.
Right.
You know, and it was like that moment of levity that kind of got me through this dark moment. And then it kind of chilled out from there. The only problem was the storms were starting to roll in. It was afternoon. And, you know, I finally get up to the top of this thing. And then I've got a drop down the other side. And it was an amazing downhill. Thank goodness, because I couldn't have, if I was going the other way, I would not have been able to ride several sections in that one. Whereas going the other way, it was just a great, great downhill.
Okay.
But I smoked my brakes twice going down it. I'm riding guide brakes with a 180 in the front and a 160 in the rear.
Yeah.
And it just reeked of brake, like burn.
Pulling them all the way to the bar?
No, thank goodness, no.
Okay, all right.
You know, my brakes ended up reacting very, very well as far as the heat management. Yeah. It's like me being able to still stop. I mean, you could tell that I was completely glazing pads.
Yeah.
My brake force was going way down, so I had to like pull on the brakes a ton more.
Sure.
But I was still able to end up stopping, let him cool down a little bit.
Wow.
I look at I'm kind of getting like the blue smoke thing going on the rotors.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So I let him chill a little bit, but it's like the whole time I'm like, I got to get down this mountain as fast as I can, because it's just like, I'm hearing thunder and lightning all around me. I'm not getting rained on yet.
And you knew there was a spot to stay or chill out down the bottom?
I knew Copper Mountain was at the bottom, but I had no idea other than that, because it's like, going up the climb, you're so focused on getting to the top of the climb. And I'm like, okay, I know I have this amount, but you're not looking ahead and being like, okay, what's the downhill like in the town?
Sure, yeah.
I don't know how far that is out. And then I get to the top and I'm like, holy crap, I'm going to get like just completely hosed here in a second. I got to get right on this ridge so I don't get electrocuted. And you just start dropping down. And, eventually near the bottom, it finally let loose, and it was like this huge hailstorm, turned the whole trail white.
Oh.
I get down to the trailhead. I'm like hiding out under the trailhead sign, which has got like a little roof.
Sure.
And then there's like a little bit of a lull, and I can see this semi, which it's one of those tough mutter trucks.
Yeah, yeah.
Which made me laugh.
I'm sure that they've seen some tough mud.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm hiding out underneath the semi trailer waiting for the hail to end up stopping.
Jeez.
Yeah, so at that point I was pretty damn beat down, because I mean, it was just cold, it was wet. I mean, it'd been a long day.
Something you mentioned to me, and I wanted to talk about it more, is that this trail is not, you would not recommend it for me.
Correct. And with the caveat, I mean, there's a lot of people that should ride this. I mean, yeah. I think I would highly recommend it for a lot of people, but I mean, it is aerobically really challenging.
Right.
There are some places where it's technically really challenging. I mean, you're going through some like hardcore boulder fields. It's not for Joe Schmo.
Okay.
It's like, if you are used to technical riding and, you know, you're okay with just kind of going your pace and getting up a hill and then having a good time getting rowdy on the downhill.
Yeah.
And you have enough time to do this trail. I mean, you could easily do this.
Right.
And the thing though, is it's like, as it starts to stretch out, you've got extended periods between civilization.
Yeah.
You know, like the way I did it, from Denver to like Breckenridge was like 3-ish, 4-ish days. So, but it's like, if you know, twice as long, 8 days,
sure,
you're hauling along a lot of food to get from point A to point B.
Right.
And that's going to slow you down some more. So, you know, there's kind of a calculus there where, you know, you've got to have a certain degree of willingness to, you know, suffer, go your own pace, just keep a move on, however you want to put it, getting up the hill. Mm-hmm. And then you got to have, you know, some technical chops to be able to end up getting on the other side.
That's something that you excel at though, is your mental fortitude. was there any time during those days where you're like, fuck, I'm not doing this. Why am I out here? This is dumb.
No, wait,
there's a store right there.
Yeah. So
I can easily get my car.
No, definitely no. Because okay. what happened was, it was like, I went into it like I described. I had this, you know, low consequence. If I don't finish this, so the hell what?
Oh, so having that always there, I guess, is...
Yeah. So, you know, so at the beginning part, so like I kind of, you know, laid out the drop into Copper Mountain. And that was kind of a low moment. You know, it's
yeah.
Like, I went in
the text
town,
I got was... Whoa.
Well, so what happened is, and I don't know if this was, you know, the beer and alcohol speaking or the riding speaking or the altitude or what. But
or Colorado in other ways.
Who knows?
Yeah.
But no, so I drop into Copper Mountain. I get pizza. I get beer, you know.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. It, you know, I
laundry.
Feel, No, nothing like that yet. I mean, this was only like, I don't know, it was like day three or whatever.
Yeah.
So I'd start to head out of town, but I'm just whooped at that point. You know, yeah. It's like, you know, the effort's kind of caught up with me. The altitude's caught up with me, all this kind of stuff. So I camp not far out of town.
Okay.
And I started to try to, and then I'm like, okay, I should be further. I know that.
Right.
You know, I'm 30 miles in the hole at the get go.
Right.
I planned out, I plotted out my pacing based right. on where I should end up going.
And you're not where you're supposed to be right now.
Yeah, but based on 11 days. So right now I'm at 11 and a half days-ish.
Yeah.
You know, like from the get-go, and then I've just already lost another half day. So sure. I'm like right at the 12-day limit, which is all I've got in order to get to Durango in time to get my rental car so I can get to Denver so I can get to Leadville so I can race this damn Leadville race.
Right.
So I'm like, Gomez started man, this whole party. Nothing else can go wrong for me to be able to finish this.
Right.
So what I do is, like, when I originally set this out, I just line it up as like day one, day two, day three, day four,
sure.
which doesn't mean anything to me on the trail. Like, I'm kind of at this point where I'm like, okay, I can look at my phone and it's going to tell me I'm Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, or whatever.
But you have no idea what day it is.
Yeah. But I'm right. like, okay, I know my rental is good. On the Thursday. So I have to make it to Durango on the Wednesday.
Sure.
You know, and then I kind of like back it out.
Right.
So
right,
I kind
of. Yeah, but when you're on vacation, you don't know what day it is.
No. So, you know, I'm thinking in terms of days. I'm not thinking in terms of numbers or like in terms of numbers of days on the Colorado Trail, nor numbers of days on the calendar.
It wasn't working out is what you're
saying. No. So I basically, okay, I'm going to add to the spreadsheet. I'm on my phone trying to like modify the spreadsheet and like plot out like how is my pacing? Where am I at?
Right.
And through that, I somehow missed a day. I went to like Monday to Wednesday instead of Monday to Tuesday. And, you know, I worked it on. I'm like, I'm hosed. I can't get this.
When you did know? You figure out that you had missed a day? The next day?
So, yeah, it was the next day.
So day
four.
No, day five.
Was it day
you
five?
Went
from, okay.
Day five, yep. you went yeah, copper yeah, to five. Leadville.
Yep. So on that day, I get into Leadville. I get into this, you know, dirty hotel, which is like awesome because it's right on the strip. The bike shop is like just across the street.
Yeah.
You know, I've got good food. Just everything's like right there.
Right.
So that's when I like go through and I like review and I'm like, oh, I screwed up on my days.
I'm good.
Yeah, I'm like, okay.
When some guy said, hey, dude, it's Sunday. You're like, oh, I thought it was day three. No, we call that Sunday.
Yeah. So I then I was like, oh, okay, sweet. I can do this. And I started, and I also looked at the route because.
I wonder why you lost track of days.
So
how could you do that, man?
No, it's okay. So I looked at the route.
Right.
And like in general, I knew I had to get around 45 to 48 miles a day.
Yeah.
And over the next, you know, section, I've got this big, long detour around a wilderness area.
Right.
And I looked at the profile and it's mostly downhill. So this is the one going into Buena Vista.
Okay.
And I'm like, okay, if I do a big day there, I can get a good 20, 30 miles back.
Okay.
So that'll get me up there. And then if I can do a couple hard days in a row, I can gain back another day and I can basically get it. So I've got a little bit of extra at the end.
Oh.
So if anything comes up, I'm golden. I'll get back on my 11-day schedule.
There you go.
Yeah. So.
But, okay. What were you going to say? Because this the question was, pussies can't do this trail. It wasn't a question. It's not a question. Exactly. But, this is a complete varsity team, like first string varsity. So if you're second string on the JV team, or even the captain of the JV team, you might want to think about doing portions of the trail.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Okay. And it's an amazing trail. So like if you ended up doing Denver to Leadville, I mean, that would be a great section to end up doing.
Okay.
Or right. if you ended up, you know, doing some of these other sections.
The hike-a-bike was in that section.
Yeah. But But there's, I've learned since then, there's a bike path you can take that completely bypasses that.
Oh.
And you can ride it in like an hour
then
and a half.
Then you don't get to meet the pika up at the top.
No. Though. No, you don't.
You know. You get rollerbladers going down the bike.
God, exactly.
Oh, I hate bike paths. I've been on them too much this summer.
It's a way different experience. Let's just put it that way.
Okay. So, what you make it to Leadville.
Yeah, I made it into Leadville. To kind of give people perspective, I'd had a lot of rain. That's what I guess I hadn't talked about.
Okay.
Day two, when I was doing the reroute, a good chunk of that day was in the rain, and it was 45, 50 degrees.
Ooh, chilly.
Yeah. Yeah, descend down from a mountain pass.
Wet's okay, cold's okay, wet and cold suck.
Ooh, man, that was it. So it was a really rough day.
Okay.
You know, and then it's like, you know, that I mean, it was... I had times to dry out, but
how'd your gear do?
Gear did great.
I mean, it can only do, it's got limitations, you know, you're going to get wet.
Yeah. But I mean, it's like, I had stuff packed well
okay.
on my bike. So I always had all my dry stuff that I needed to keep dry.
Yeah.
That was never a problem. I ended up having some good wool layers and stuff like that. So when I'd start to get rained on, I could always, like, you know, basically get the wool layers on, get the raincoat on, you know, stay reasonably warm. But, you know, no matter what you do, when it's like 45 degrees and raining
and
you're going downhill for 20 minutes, you're going to get really freaking cold.
I want to mention that at the end of the slideshow, if you go to the end, you'll see KBS put up his what his bike was, what was in his packs, spare parts, his tools, what his camping gear was, what clothing he had. It's still pretty much dorkitude on the Fat Camp podcast, even though it might not be technical right now. He wrote down what kind of underwear he took with him. So so you get into Leadville.
Yeah, so I was able to...
You're all nasty and funky. And
I was able to wash clothes. I was able to resupply on food. I was able to resupply on alcohol.
Right.
All sorts of stuff.
Was there any part of you like, I got to be back here in a week and I got to do this race?
Oh, there's a million
like,
parts of me.
I could stop right now and just hang out in Leadville for a while.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like I said, I got into town fairly early that day. That was probably my easiest day of the whole ride, even though I just got hosed weather-wise.
Yeah.
It was another day of like super rain, hail, descending from a mountain pass, you know, it's super cold. But I got into town fairly early, and so it was like I had all this stuff to do. I was able to look at the route. I was able to be like, okay, wait a minute, this is doable if I can bust out a couple days.
Sure.
So I mean, it was really motivatingly leaving town, being like, okay, bust out these couple days, and then I'm back on track. I can do this.
Can we stop at Leadville about... Because there's other questions I have about the ride, but and it's not necessarily, hey, what was the next day and the next day, and then questions that'll come up during those discussions about that.
So a question you're not going to ask.
What's that?
Bike shop in Leadville. Cool guys there.
Okay.
So I ended up buying brake pads from them because I had worn through my brake pads in the first 4 days of riding.
Yeah.
I was using organic pads instead of semi-metallics. You know, they totally hooked me up on that. They gave me good trail intel. So... While I was thinking of it,
I want to get into your bike and how, how it,
it's not
what'd
a plus bike. It's not a fat bike.
It's
sorry,
not a,
guys.
No, it's a skinny bike. It's a 2.35.
Well, kind of, yeah. It's 2.35 labeled, but they're like 2.5 inches.
And,
what, wide
and
rims.
How wide are the rims?
37 millimeters or something. Yeah.
But it, do you think it's common to experience what you did on the Colorado Trail and have to rebuild everything?
No, because it was really, really, really wet for me.
Okay, all right.
If anybody who followed the Colorado Trail Race, so to give people perspective as far as the timing goes, the Colorado Trail Race started this year, and it sounded like it was pretty biblical. A huge chunk of the field dropped out because it was so rainy, so wet, so cold.
And it goes the opposite direction.
Yeah, Durango this year, it alternates every year. Okay. This year it went from Durango towards Denver.
Cool.
And they started... I think it was 5 or 6 days before I did.
Okay.
So it was awesome.
I ran into everybody.
Yeah, I got to see from third place onward.
Oh, wow.
Of the finishers. Cool. And like the third and fourth place dudes
did
were
you
like,
know? Hey, oh my God, this
not initially. I did not register at all.
Okay. Well, not much did. Not days of the week or times or whatever.
No, yeah. That was early on. I was more coherent then. But no, but it's like I saw the third place dude and then the fourth place dude was like right behind him. Mm. And so the first couple of days, it's like I was seeing all these bike packers. And I'm like, man, this is a popular route. I can't believe
how
many
intense
people are out here riding this race.
Yeah.
Or this, you know, this route.
Right.
But then it was like I finally ended up, you know, running into a group where we weren't both trying to make time. You know, it's like there's sometimes you'll pass people on the trail and it's like you're both trying to get somewhere. You know, it's a fast section.
Chit chat.
Yeah. And then sometimes you like meet up and you're at a parking lot and you're both kind of like, you know, digging through, you know, moving around stuff, eating,
right,
getting water, whatever.
Yeah.
And you can rap with people for
a
while.
Sure.
And they were talking about, you know, doing the Colorado Trail race and stuff. So that's when I was like, oh, this makes sense.
Okay.
So that was a couple days in or whatever. And, you know, so then it was like, it was really cool to kind of track how people were doing.
So, but is it unusual for the amount of moisture that you ran into?
Very, very.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's what everybody told me was if I had gone out there, you know, like kind of a week, 2 weeks before,
okay,
it was like super hot.
Yeah, yeah.
And then all of a sudden it was like just uncharacteristically humid. Like they even commented when I was doing Leadville and they were like, yeah, and the weather forecast says that tomorrow is going to be 46% humidity, you know, and it was like, you know,
oh.
I don't remember what else they said after that, but it was just like, you know, they were like, man, that's just, you know, that's so humid, you know.
Jeez,
it's,
oh, Pete.
It's totally uncharacteristic. You
Holy
know?
Cow.
So it's pretty odd. I mean, afternoon thunderstorms, you expect that this time of year, but I mean, there was a lot of rain outside of that.
Definite full suspension party?
I mean, I can see where, well, especially if you were going to end up going with a hardtail plus bike with a suspension fork,
yeah.
I can see that being another really good scenario.
Okay.
But anything more than that, it's like kind of just getting into the masochistic
okay.
category.
It's been done though.
Oh, heck yeah.
Okay.
I mean, like there was a dude leading the race this year for a long time. I don't remember. He's a Colorado guy, who was riding fully rigid single speed.
I wanted to, that came up in my brain one day recently about people ride single speed in mountainous areas.
Yeah. And
how
like
do they gear?
Well, and another guy, he's the 11th person to complete the triple divide, if I'm getting my stats right, and he's the first person to do it on a single gear. I might be wrong about that.
This is Arizona, Colorado, and?
Arizona, Tour Divide.
And Colorado.
Colorado Trail.
Okay.
All
right.
Yeah.
Those races, yeah.
Yeah, so the Colorado Trail finished it off.
Okay.
Yeah, and he completed all three this year on a single speed.
Is it just
You gear it really low. And,
okay.
the thing is, it's like there's a lot of sections where you can walk it as fast as you'd be able to ride it.
Okay.
You know, it's like.
And do you think you lose a lot on the downhills, though, or when you're looking for a high end?
Not on the downhills. I mean, you're just letting it loose anyways.
Yeah, okay.
But, I mean, well, I guess, you know, with the lack of suspension, you're going to get the shit beat out of you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
so,
yeah.
I mean, you know, that you're going to end up losing some energy and stuff. But, you know, I don't think you lose a whole lot of speed that way.
Does
most
it make
of,
more sense to single speed it then?
I mean, if it's a really wet year, I can kind of see that. But, no. You know, well, in the argument for it is that the bike is so light, you know, all of a sudden you're going to take a couple pounds off your bike or whatever.
Sure.
If you're hike-a-biking anyways, you know, if you can go with an ultralight setup, you can move really fast.
Okay.
You know, even like pushing your bike or carrying your bike, you know, you're okay.
So is that something you might do then?
No, no, no.
You make all the arguments
I mean,
for
if,
it.
If I lived out there, maybe I might consider single speed, but
right.
You know, being a lowlander, there's okay. No possible way I could get acclimated and then try to do something like that.
Did you have enough suspension front and rear?
I mean, there's spots where I wish I hit a heck of a lot more.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, there were some really, really rough spots.
You didn't have a ton, though. There's not a ton on that bike.
Oh, I've
there?
Got I got 120 up front and 100 in the
okay.
rear.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, it's I got a cross country rig, but
yeah,
I mean, it's a fair amount of suspension, okay. And I used every last millimeter of it.
Okay.
I bottomed the fork out. I bottomed the back out.
Okay.
You know, every pretty much every day. I shouldn't say every day. You know, most of the days out there.
And what about just bikepacking equipment in general in terms of handlebar bags, seat bag?
Yeah, so bag. I was using a Barking Bear handlebar bag and seat bag. I basically had my sleep system up front primarily, and then I had like clothing and my sleeping bag in the rear. I ended up having two frame bags because it was a full suspension bike. I had kind of like two different spots. You'll see pictures. Those are both made by Rogue Panda. And then on the fork, I ended up going, I was running a Fox 34 and I did the King Cage. They're like a band clamp that you can use as sort of a pseudo water bottle boss.
Yeah.
And then I used the King Cage titanium Manything cages, which were awesome. And two Salsa Anything bags.
Okay.
Because I didn't want to have to worry about trying to find fuel. I didn't want to have to worry about trying to find like meals and stuff like, you know, like dinners, I should say.
Right.
So I ended up bringing the full 12 days worth of dinners with me, which were all, I don't remember what brand, but you know, one of those things where you boil water, you put it in the pouch, you let it sit for like 30 minutes.
Stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And then you got about 1,000 calories worth of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so I ended up bringing a full 12 days worth of that. So I had,
where was that?
That was all in those fork
bags.
I shouldn't say all of it. I think I ended up having 7 days worth of stuff in the bags. And then I had stashed some in my camel bag.
Okay. And how did the fuel work out for you? That was my question.
Fuel worked out great. I ended up...
Use the 100 gram size or?
Yeah, yeah. The 100 gram. What is...
So that's the small one, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's real small. I'm blanking on
the whole time.
What's the name of the stove I was using?
Jet boil.
Thank you. Yeah, so I could boil water. I had another 2-3 days worth of fuel in there, and I used one canister.
Oh, because it boils it so freaking quick.
Exactly.
Boom, done.
Super efficient.
Did you do coffee on the trip?
I did not, but I did tea.
Okay.
Yeah, pretty much every day I ended up doing black tea.
Oh. Hey, can you bring coffee tomorrow? Do you have any coffee?
I haven't roasted any coffee recently.
Dang. All right,
sorry, man.
I got to stop and get coffee then.
Yep.
We're going bikepacking tomorrow, but it's no big deal. Just for an overnight. So what the... Oh, so the gear all worked well.
The gear worked
you
great.
You had enough room.
Yeah. Oh, heck yeah. I had plenty of room.
You had room for more stuff.
I mean, not when I was totally topped off. Like when I first started, because I was doing 12 dinners.
Yeah.
I mean, that took up a lot of volume.
Yeah.
So once I made it to Leadville, I'd basically worked off everything that was in my pack. And then it started to free up room and I had a ton of room.
How did your appetite change?
Basically, I could eat anything by the end of this trip.
Okay.
So
I need to preface this. You're a vegetarian?
Yeah.
Since birth?
Pretty much. Yeah. My Never parents were vegetarians, like totally raised me that way.
Okay.
Yeah. But I met a trail angel. That was by Kenosha Pass a little after that. And they had the hot dogs and they had potato chips and they had Coke.
Oh, wow.
And all this other kind of stuff. So I ended up eating a hot dog there.
Oh. But did you smother it with everything that you needed on
that
thing?
Yeah. Oh, it was awesome. It was like relish and mustard.
Right.
Oh, it was just got wrong. And then at one of the breweries, they ended up like being like, hey, you want this package of jerky? And I'm like, hell yeah.
Wow.
Calories. I'll take it.
Sure.
Calorie salt. Yes.
But did it taste good?
Tasted fine.
Okay.
Kind of food would have tasted good. I could have gnawed on my sole of my shoe and it would have tasted good.
So what was it about? I mean, 2 days into it, you're like, I can't do cliff bars anymore.
I don't know. I just, they were like too sweet.
Is that
they
part
just
of
like
the altitude thing?
It could have been that. I mean, cliff bars sometimes will do that to me.
Yeah.
They just didn't appeal. So what I normally would end up doing for lunch is I brought a canister of peanut butter.
Yeah.
And a squeezable thing of jelly.
Right.
And some tortillas.
Okay.
And I do those for lunch, and then I finally kind of morphed into where I'd integrate some potato chips in there, and that was amazing.
More potato chips.
Yeah, I love potato chips. And then it kind of evolved into, getting blocks of cheese.
So you pick up some cheese in town.
Yeah. Yeah. You just pick up a block of cheese and then it's like, you kind of have some, you know, some cheese with this. And then eventually the tortillas just didn't even really sound good. So I just go with like cheese and jelly and potato chips. And it was awesome.
And that was lunch.
Yeah.
Or that was whatever you needed.
Yeah. And it was like so appetizing. And it didn't like sit wrong. It was amazing.
Did you cook breakfast?
I didn't cook breakfast. I always ended up, well, I shouldn't say I always did pouch? Granola. I normally did granola.
Okay.
You know, so what I mixed, I kind of planned out ahead of time that I had 4 days worth of breakfast.
Yeah.
And it's like granola with some like dried milk and some whey powder and stuff there. Okay. So, okay. You know, a pretty hearty breakfast. I tried to get about 1,000 calories in the morning, 1,000 calories at night. And then I'd try to get, you know, 1,000 to 2,000 during like lunch or lunches, depending on how many I had
right.
during the day. And then, you know, I'd supplement beyond that.
Huh. Okay. Geez, how long have we been talking?
Damn. We're going on this segment at 55 minutes.
All right. I think that we come back in October and talk about day 7 through 11.
Let's try to churn through it. Yeah.
Yeah.
We got a lot of basics down.
Well, yeah, yeah, yeah. And we'll have, you know, in October, we'll have something technical to talk about at the beginning.
I'm sure, because we're going to start getting into bike show season.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's always a good time.
And we'll, yeah, we'll be, God, we've got a lot to talk about.
Jeez, yeah, we do.
Okay. So anyway,
and a snoring dog.
You made it this long. Mention of emails, because we've been in our own little, because we've been on vacation.
It's been a busy summer.
Yeah, we've been doing different stuff, different places. If one of us has not responded to your email, it's not because we're being jerks. It's because sometimes. He didn't know if...
Life gets in the
way. Yeah. So, re-emails. But there have been some good emails that we need to bring up, and we've got some good suggestions from people about shows that they want to hear.
Yep.
So, I think once we get through this...
We're going to get into some... We're definitely going to get into some emails and some good questions.
Right, exactly. So, that's the point. So, with that, check us out on Instagram at Fat Camp Podcasters, and you can email us at Fat Camp Podcast... Is it... What is it? Fat Camp Podcasters.
Plural.
At gmail.com. And if you email us now, we'll definitely respond.
I'm not gonna. We're all over it.
Yeah, exactly. We'll jump on it. So, anyways, number 26 in the books.
Cheers.
Later.
Thank you for listening. The music we are using on today's show is from the Free Music Archive and is the song Rocky Top, performed by Jason Shaw. You can find all our shows at fat-bike.com, including notes for today's show.